Welcome to Mumfessions, the award-winning podcast that helps you navigate motherhood. I'm Laura Guckian, maternal mental health advocate, motherhood coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. I'm on a mission to change how we talk about and support maternal mental health. This isn't just another motherhood podcast, because you are my guests. Each week, I'll be sharing your Mumfessions, the honest, raw, messy truths mums are often too afraid to say out loud. I'll unpack the guilt, the overwhelm, the rage, and the reality. And I'll give you practical tools to help you move into your happier chapter of motherhood. And this season, I've invited some special guests to help answer your Mumfessions, because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Before we begin, can I ask you to do me a massive favor? Please hit the follow or subscribe button. This will help more mothers to find Mumfessions. Coming up this week.
I haven't really said this before.
There's moments in our life where we are vulnerable. And like, I think one of those moments is early motherhood where we need to be taken care of. We're not okay in Ireland.
No.
Mothers are like,
we're not okay.
One night. Or early morning where I was changing a nappy and breastfeeding, and I just got really angry that my husband was able to stay asleep.
Oh God.
Louise, what did you do?
I recently took some money out of my children's savings account to buy myself some new clothes, some makeup, and some actual underwear that isn't 6 years old and falling apart.
I am so excited for today's guest. You know that sometimes this podcast is a little serious because we talk about maternal mental health. But actually, my guest today is someone that I think through her work supports maternal mental health, possibly more than I do, because sometimes the best thing we need is to just have a laugh at how hard it can feel and how frustrating it can feel and everything that goes with that. So you may have already guessed who it is by me saying that, but I am so, so delighted to welcome the lovely Louise Boyce, aka Mama Still Got It. Welcome to Mumfessions, Louise.
Oh, thank you. I'm really, really happy to be here. Thanks for asking me. This is awesome.
It's brilliant. And you are here today to share your Mumfession.
Yes.
And to help me answer an audience Mumfession.
Ooh, okay. Yes.
Okay. Before we get into that, for anyone who may not know who you are, do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do?
Okay. Hi, guys. I'm Louise, and I have an Instagram and TikTok handle called Mama Still Got It. And it's about motherhood. I'm a mum of three, and it's very lighthearted comedy about every mundane situations we go through as mothers. And from that, I've created a character called, I have named Bernie, and it's the little plastic hands, which I'm now known for. And I go, the lady with the little plastic hands. Wasn't the plan when I first joined Instagram, but there you go. And so I do sketches with these characters, and I mock my husband a lot. And it's a place for escapism, or to feel you're not alone, you're not going crazy in this motherhood journey. And hopefully you'll get a few laughs out of it as well.
Yeah, we definitely do. And I think it's iconic, that little mommy, mommy, mommy. And we were just joking about it here before we came on, how there are literally days where when I hear it, I'm like, I'm willing to do something to just get away from here and be put away for a few days in silence, because it can literally, it stings.
It drives you mad. And the crazy thing is, as mothers, when you first have your baby, you're like, oh, I can't wait for you to say mommy or mama. And then they get there, then you're like, shut up. Stop saying it. Like, just stop it. My kids now will just say mum or mummy, or now my teenager just says bro. They'll just say it, but don't follow anything. So it's literally just, they go, mum, and they don't follow anything through with it. And I'm like, you're just now saying my name just to say it. I'm like, what is it?
What do you want?
What do you want?
And why? Yeah, exactly.
Stop saying my name without meaning to.
I love it. And it's something every mother can relate to. And it always is kind of the end of the day when you're just exhausted, it's noisy, and it's like, stop calling my name. Everyone, stop. But
I saw a sketch actually the other day of his mum who had a clicker, and she clicked it how many times someone said her name or a question.
Yeah.
And I think it was like up there, like 800 and something. And then like, you wonder why mums are completely overwhelmed, overstimulated, over everything, over it.
Yep.
Like we are exhausted and a lot of it is mental.
Yep.
Kind of taking that all in. And as we've got the summer holidays about to begin.
They've already begun in Ireland.
Oh my gosh, that's right. You get so much more time off. I'm so sorry. How do you do it?
We don't.
How long do you have off?
Depends. If they're teenagers and in like secondary school, they finish maybe the end of May. Start
oh,
of
hell
June.
No.
Right?
No.
For the primary school kids, end of June.
Wow. And they go back when? December?
Start of September.
Wow, that's a
And we get all of the same off. Holidays you guys get, like midterms. Yeah, it's we're not okay in
no.
Ireland.
No.
Mothers are like...
we're not okay.
We're not okay. It goes on for maybe 8-9 weeks. And I don't care what anyone says. I absolutely, as a mother, find summer holidays incredibly hard.
Oh no, they are really hard. They yeah. are really, especially when you're working and you're literally trying to juggle everything.
It's not good. My house now is everyone's just like screaming at each other, fighting, and yeah. I'm just like, is it September? Can somebody yeah. just wake me up when it's September? But before we get into your mum fashion, I actually have a mum fashion because I find that noise so overstimulating. Mm. The mommy. I'm literally Googling like industrial headphones. I am fully committed to, do I get these and do I just start going around the house with these headphones on?
Get them.
And let them, like, I think I will.
I do it with them when the kids were younger and there was more noise. Yeah. I used to put earplugs in.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Just to yeah. muffle it a little bit, just so it's not so shrill all the time. I can still hear them, but it just tones it down.
Yeah.
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 So yeah. Definitely do it.
Definitely do it. So that leads us, Louise, to what is your mumfession?
Oh, God, you know what? I'm thinking about this. I've got so many, which is horrendous, isn't it? But hopefully we all do. But if we go back to the very early years, the newborn stages.
Trenches.
Where you are up at night and I'm breastfeeding, so my husband is very peacefully sleeping away. And then, you know, has the audacity to say that he had a bad night's sleep when he wakes up after a proper 7-hour solid sleep. So it's around this time and he doesn't really know this. I haven't really said this before. So I'm hoping that he doesn't listen to this, although it is now, you know, years gone by and I'm sure he's washed. But so, oh dear, I was changing a nappy in the middle of the night and there's a lot of poo and yeah, everything's leaking everywhere and you know, you've got your husband right there having a lovely snore and a lovely sleep. Anyway, there was one night or early morning where I was changing a nappy and breastfeeding and I just got really angry that my husband was able to stay asleep. So I... oh God.
Louise, what did you do to me?
I got a little bit of my baby's poo and I just kind of like wiped it under his nose whilst he was asleep. Only a little bit.
I bet it didn't wake him.
Oh no, it didn't wake him. But I knew that he was smelling it
okay.
whilst he was asleep. And it made me really giggle as I got back into bed. And then when the next morning when he woke up, you know, he kind of like to lean over and give me a kiss. And I was like, oh, I don't. Yeah, so he doesn't actually know this.
It's okay. Dads aren't allowed to listen to this.
Fine. No dads allowed. Fine. But yeah, if anyone's listening, who are in the trenches of changing nappies with newborns, I highly recommend it because it just made me really laugh
yeah.
to myself. And he'll never know unless he listens to this. But, you know, this is now almost 10 years ago. So, you know, I'm sure he'll get over it.
I totally understand why you did that, though. Like, it is, I don't know if you can relate to this, but you probably can, but it's the sheer resentment. And I carried it in early motherhood where it's kind of like, why do you get to become a parent and mm-hmm. get the sleep and get all of that? And I'm left quite literally holding the baby. Like I might be feeding them, I'm whatever it might be.
Mm.
And it's just this frustration and anger of why... As a woman, is it just so much harder? Why do I have to do all of this?
Yeah, like, it's brutal. And when I had my children, my husband, I think it was pre-COVID. So it was, he had to be in the office every yeah. day. I think it is a little bit, I think there is more flexible working now, which is brilliant. Or I think there is anyway. But my husband had to be back in the office after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I had quite a horrific birth where I really needed him at home to help me feed, literally feed me. And after 2 weeks, he was gone. And I felt like, I'm not ready for this. I don't know. And he was, when I say gone, you know, he, because of his job, he was gone from, I'd say, 8 in the morning to like 8 at night. Wow. He missed the entire, like everything. He missed everything. And it's, I'm doing it all. Fine. That's my role. But there is resentment. And there is that kind of like, I've lost my identity. Mm-hmm. I feel lost and I feel alone. When I became a mother, I wasn't online as I am today. I wasn't even online at all. I didn't read any online forums. None of my friends had kids. I really, really felt alone. And the only person that had a baby at the same time as me that I could look up to was Beyonce, which is ridiculous. And you can imagine, like, her experience was completely different from mine.
Your expectations of motherhood were set with Beyonce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'd like be booking magazines and there's her with Blue Ivy, like, oh my God, everything's perfect and amazing. This is great. And I'm living my best life. And look how fabulous I look. And I'm working. And oh, look at this lovely salad I'm eating. And I'm like, haven't showered for 4 days and got puke on my shoulder and just feeling gross.
Yeah.
And I just felt really, yeah, I completely lost my identity. And then, you know, my husband would message me and say, oh, do you mind if I go for a couple of pints after work? And I'm like, of course I don't mind, but can you also just acknowledge that I'm drowning here and I really need help?
Yeah.
And he did help, don't get me wrong, but I was actually jealous that his life almost went back to normal after 2 weeks. It went back to normal. His body didn't change at all.
Yeah.
His work was the same. He could go out for drinks the same. It's very different. And I can see why people argue, because you're just like, hello, I'm still here and I need help. But saying that, it's very different now. So my brother became a father 3 years ago. And they said from the very start when they were pregnant that they are co-parents from the start.
Love that.
Like everything is 50-50, but their work, they can work from home. So they are together at home all day, every day. They take their kid to nursery, they can pick up, they can share everything. Whereas I never had that. And it's lovely to see. And if anyone can do that, then that's great. Because that really is co-parenting and it really is your 50-50. Whereas I think anyone who has a partner that has an office job pre-COVID,
we were done for.
We would left.
Yeah.
We were left. And that's really hard. And then, you know, when you do go back to work and then you've got all the expense of it. I mean, I don't know how much nursery is in Ireland.
Oh, wild.
Is it the same as the UK?
Wild. Yeah. Like, it's a second mortgage.
It's
and that's just for one child.
Mortgage. It's impossible to almost have children and still live your life. I mean, you're just broke the whole time. And
this is so interesting because I think as you're talking about this, what was coming up for me is, I think as women, when we become mothers, and again, we're putting it out there, some women don't have this experience. It is amazing and they do enjoy every moment and all of that. And that's amazing. We love that. However, there's so many women that are like, what happened? This is nothing like I imagined. This is really hard. I can't see anyone that looks like me. I can't see anyone that feels like me. I don't feel supported. Mm. And I think the first person we'll take that out on is our partner,
of
warranted
course.
Or not warranted.
Yeah.
But actually, I think what it's a symptom of is a society that literally does not mind mommy, that doesn't support her, because I've done a lot of like work and research into this. It's so much more than like medical support. It's a wider piece of society, like community. Like if you look at Sweden, I think it's Sweden. They literally have, I think it's something like 2 years off that's shared with your partner.
It. Yeah.
They have community support. They have nailed it. We all need to move to Sweden. In Germany, I think a midwife comes and visits your home for a couple of hours a day for the first 6 weeks.
Mm.
Like, we are literally left. We are told this would be the best time of your life. We are told it will all feel amazing. Cherish every moment. 18 summers, all of that nonsense. But actually, the reality is it's you've just grown a baby. You've just gone through this process of delivering it. Your body is absolutely battered. We're now taking your sleep. We're taking your identity. Go enjoy every moment. Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's a real, yeah, it's a tricky one because no one, we're the first generation of parents on social media.
Yeah.
So we're really seeing the real hard, raw truths about parenting. And now, of course, there's a birth decline. And you, and it's like, well, because the generation behind us are like going, oh, so you're telling the truth about everything. And why would we want that? Like, why yeah. would we want that? And I totally get it. I also do love being a mother.
Yeah.
I love it. And I wouldn't change it for the world. And my kids are amazing. But no one really told me how hard it was going to be. And it's interesting. So I spoke to my mum about this the other day. And she went through the same thing, you know, but in her generation, you just got on with it. And that's what she says about everything, menopause, divorce, everything. You just get on with it. And that was it because there was no podcasts or there yeah. was no therapy or there was no, it was all about, you know, we're very British. We have to, you know, do the right thing and just get on with it. And, yeah. But yeah, parenting is, well, being a mother is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's also extremely rewarding, but it's not all rainbows and butterflies. It's rainbows, butterflies, and a hell of a lot of shit.
Yeah. but both can be true. I think this is like that false narrative of the perfect mother that we must enjoy every mm. moment and to love our children. We must love it. We must never want to leave them. But actually, you can love your children and go, this is really hard, and feel like if you call my name one more time, mm. I'm actually going to give you away. Like, yeah. And I mean it in that moment. So like, I think, yes, we are the first generation of mothers that are speaking about this and we've access to social media and there's people like you who are mm. making light of it and there's people like me who are talking about like the deep part of it. Mm. But I also think that's maybe part of why it is harder for us because we're the first generation of mothers who have access to experts online. Mm. That can be a good and a bad thing
yes.
because there is a major gap between the ideal way to do it and our capacity. Mm. We are looking at what Mary down the road is doing and her experience doesn't match my experience. So am I doing it wrong? Mm. We've been told as women we can have it all. And excuse my language, that's absolute bullshit. Like we can't have it all. Mm. And I just feel like what our mother's generation, they didn't have that. I don't think they were striving to do it all and to do it perfectly. They were just doing it within their bubble. Mm. And as you said, not knowing what someone down the road was doing. Whereas mm. when we wake up in the morning, we're bombarded with these images and, yeah. and they're not realistic and they're not possible.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, I think also back in the day, like even like my grandparents' era, there was very much the man's role and the woman's yeah. role. It's very different. You know, women didn't necessarily have to go to work. Whereas today, like most couples, well, all the couples that I know, both parents have to work
yeah.
just to pay their mortgage because yeah. everything is just so expensive now that both parents have to work. And if you have children, then you have to put them into nursery. And so it's like this catch 22 of trying to yeah have it all. Just basically, you just need to be really, really rich and have loads of nannies, basically, don't you? And then you'd be fine. And yeah. then it's fine.
I think. Look, we've cracked it. End of podcast. If we're just That's super it. Rich,
just
it's
need to
fine.
Be really rich. Just be Beyonce.
Just be Beyonce. Yeah. I mean, you were onto it from day one.
Yeah, I should have known from day one. Yeah,
but it is such a key point because I often get in trouble for saying like we can't do it all. Mm. But like I know this from working with like I've worked with thousands of mothers and. Mm. When they come to me, it's this pressure of I'm not doing enough, I'm failing. Oh, I feel guilty because I'm going to work outside the home. Yeah. Oh, I feel guilty because I'm not doing enough. I feel guilty for all of these reasons. But actually, like for me, it's about ditching the rule book, forgetting all of the shoulds, ignoring everyone and just going into your own little bubble and doing what you need to do. And like, I almost imagine if you could go back in time and start your motherhood journey again, and let's say you had a magic wand.
Yeah.
And you could have created your own rule book and your own experience. What would you have done to have made it easier in those, like in the trenches, those first 12 months?
I would have definitely not put so much pressure on myself, because I really did think, and this is with my firstborn, like the first time you become a mum, I genuinely thought I was doing everything wrong. I was so hard on myself, which then caused a bit of anxiety. Yep. I was terrified to go out with my baby in a public place in case the baby would cry. You know, what's everyone going to think? Am I a terrible mother because I can't keep my baby from crying? We went on an aeroplane to Thailand when he was 7 months old.
And wow. Sorry, can we just take a sec?
We booked it before we had the baby.
How did that go?
Oh, horrendous. I actually wanted to open up the aeroplane door when it said on the screen 9 hours to go, and my baby was screaming. And there were people next to me rolling their eyes, tutting, like, ugh, keep your baby quiet. It absolutely crippled me. Yeah. My husband was fantastic. He just held our son, basically walked up and down the aisle for about, until he fell asleep. Like, I'm talking hours.
Yeah.
Just walked up and down, whereas I was in the chair going, is everything okay? Is anyone looking at me? Am I a terrible mum? I was so... crippled by my own thoughts of I'm doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
And actually, I was doing everything right.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise, because I just, because he was a cryy baby. He cried a lot.
Yeah.
Which that's just who he is.
Yeah. I had one of those. My firstborn had severe silent reflux. I mean, when I say he cried... For the first year, like, he didn't stop crying. He didn't sleep. God,
that's really hard.
And it's looking back now, you know, when we're becoming mothers, like, and the whole industry around motherhood is buy this buggy, buy this product. There's no product that's going to help you through the trenches of early motherhood. No. This is what helps you through talking about it and
going,
this is what it's like.
Absolutely.
And I remember sitting there looking at my gorgeous, like, buggy system, the whole, like, it had the pram, you know, the convertible car seat. I couldn't leave the house with my baby because he wouldn't stop crying. So I never got to use that buggy.
Hard.
We couldn't put him in the car. And I remember sitting there like 9 years ago going, why did I spend thousands on all of these products?
Well, you say that, but I did the opposite. I bought a secondhand pram.
Okay.
From a friend of mine who had a baby, like, I think 20 years prior.
Okay.
And she had it in her loft. And I was like, well, I'll buy that. And it was the most ridiculous pram because it was enormous. It was really old.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't turn. It's one of those weird trolleys at the supermarket that had a dodgy wheel. And I remember trying to go through like a cafe door and like getting stuck.
Yeah.
And, you know, and inside the cafe are all the other mums having a nice coffee morning with their babies and their super duper prams that are like probably have air conditioning and shit on them. And that I felt judged.
Yeah.
There are pram wars. I felt completely judged that I didn't have, you know, the bugaboo or the...
That was eye a big
candy.
Thing back then. Isn't
yeah.
It still?
Yeah. And again, I was like, I failed. How could I have got a shitty pram for my baby? And I honestly felt judged. And I felt like, why didn't I just get a proper buggy? Why didn't I do that? So I went home and I bought one. And then I did feel a bit more like, okay, I fit into society now that I have this buggy. And to be fair, the buggy was brilliant and it did... I could keep it for the next two children. So it was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I was so hard on myself. Like, why didn't you just buy a buggy in the first place? And God, who cares? Like, the thing is, if the baby is happy and safe and loved, then fine, you're doing a great job. And I do think any mother that questions if they're a good mother means that they are a good mother.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So I wouldn't be so hard on myself with everything. Yeah. As soon as my second came, I was so relaxed.
Yeah.
And then my third came and I was like, it's fine.
They raised themselves.
Yeah, they raised themselves. It's fine. Although my daughter is literally extremely brilliant, but hard work. And
is your third a daughter too? My third is a daughter.
So you got two boys and a girl?
Two boys and a girl. The youngest is a girl. And my God.
Is it mental?
She's turning four and yeah.
Yes, it's completely, I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. Like, I literally call her Miss Anna because, like, there's no, she does not accept no. Like, her clothes have to be laid out and she will pick the outfit. I'm like, four.
Yes.
You are four.
Yeah.
Doesn't, I even remember when she was one and like wobbling and she was adamant she was going to crawl up on this chair. The boys always just gave up and she was like, I'm doing it. So in a way, I'm like, well done. And another, I'm like, this is the third. Mommy is tired. Just do what I say.
Do you get sassiness? Like, my daughter's so sassy. Oh, my word. And I, again, I love her. She's going to need that fire when she's older.
Yeah.
I love it. But my gosh.
It's hard.
It's really hard. It's really hard.
But it's interesting you use the term there, like, good mother, right? Yeah. So, like, I would argue that the good mother is a myth. Like, the perfect mother is a myth. There's no such thing as a good or a bad mother.
Mm.
There's just a happy mother. The key to navigating motherhood, like whatever stage it is, whether it's the trenches, the teenage years, I don't know how I'll navigate them. But
how old's your eldest? Sorry,
he's 9.
Okay, okay, it's to come. My eldest is 13 and very much a teenager.
Oh God,
he stinks. Oh, bless him. And he doesn't want me to even look at him, touch him, kiss him, nothing.
Yeah,
he's been away in France for a week. On a school trip. He gets back this evening and he's actually said, Mum, don't pick me up because I will be like, oh my God,
my baby.
Hug. And he's like, don't, you can't
That's
do that.
That's not cool.
No.
Get away
and
from
I'm like,
him.
Okay, so we'll send Dad then and I'll just do it, you know, in the privacy of our own home.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh my God, you don't even want me there.
Yeah. And that's a hard stage too.
Yeah.
Like that is,
It is hard, especially my son going through puberty. I'm going through perimenopause. Our hormones are all over the place.
We were just talking about this, how unfair it is as women.
I mean,
like, we made the babies, we carried the load, we are just coming out of it. And then it's like, hello, perimenopause.
It's not fair. Like, just when you get your sleep back, the sleepless nights are over. And you're like, this is amazing. And then that perimenopause wakes you up at 3 a.m. And then you're just lying awake, need to pee, sweating, so many thoughts going around your head. Again, questioning everything and going, I can't believe. And then, you know, you got the husband next to you fast asleep. Maybe I should put pill on his lip again.
It's time to start. But what did that feel like for you to realize maybe I am going into perimenopause here? Like, what was the first sign for you?
I was getting the hot flushes.
Yep.
And I started getting them at 42 and my mum went through the menopause at 42, which was quite early. So I was very aware that it might come early for me.
Okay.
The hot flushes, which are really weird.
Is it like when the postpartum hot flushes or is it different?
God, I can't.
Like, remember those early days and you woke up like in just a, like a bed of sweat.
Yeah, it's quite similar, I guess.
Yeah.
It's quite similar, but I could be, I mean, this could happen now, but I'm sitting here with you right now. I feel very nice and cool. But then all of a sudden, it's just this absolute rush of extreme heat. And you're like, oh my God, I just want to take my skin off. And you're embarrassed because you're like, can you see, like, do I look? And then it goes.
And then it goes.
And, you know, in a heat wave in London,
on the tube.
It's just great.
It's so unfair. Like,
I know.
Like, I'm like, I obviously have two boys and a girl. And I don't know how to describe this. And I don't know if you can relate to this. In ways, I feel like with my little girl, I'm like, right, I've got you. I know what it's like to be a girl, a young woman, a woman. Like, I can help you navigate that. Like, life is hard for a woman. It is harder. Like, I don't care what anyone says.
It's much harder. 100%.
Much harder as a woman. And I can kind of prepare her for that now. And that sassiness she has is going to stand to her, right? But then I look at my little boys and I'm like, even though I have my husband, I'm like, I don't know how to raise little men. Like, I don't know what life is going to feel like for you. And is it the way things are kind of going? Is it possible that by the time you're a man, maybe life will be harder as a man than a woman? And I don't know if that's making sense, but
it is making sense. And it's really interesting because I really feel that things are changing, which is better for women. But I also feel like men are suddenly going to feel maybe not, I don't know what the right word is, but
I think we're saying the same thing, but I'm kind of afraid to say it in case someone perceives it as something it's not. But I think I worry more about my boys than my little girl, which I never thought I would say as a woman and knowing everything I've gone through. Yeah. There's part of me that's scared that something might happen them.
Well, I mean, the thing is, my 13-year-old, he's learning about consent at school, which is brilliant because I never got asked if...
We got no education on it. I mean, I was raised in Ireland. We had nuns trying to give us sex education. I mean,
I would love to see that. What did they even do? Oh my gosh.
Like, we're not okay in Ireland between the summer holidays and the Catholic like school like education that we all got. We're not okay.
That's brilliant. My mother-in-law's Irish, so she got raised by nuns as well. So she tells me all these stories and I'm like, okay, so that's why you drink a lot, okay?
Yeah, we're not okay. Genuinely laughing, even when I was going through my ADHD assessment, I was talking to the psychologist and he's like, you know, like, what was life? You know, any trauma? I was like, no, but like, you know, we're Irish. And he was Irish too. And he's like, okay. Like, you know, it's the unwritten rule. We're not okay. You know, we never spoke about our emotions. We Catholic school upbringing, shame as girls, like shame. Don't talk about sex. Don't be sexy. Don't be anything like, and yeah, so I know we've gone off topic, but it's good that this is changing.
No, it is. It is. Like, the consent is brilliant. I love that because, you know, I never got asked by a boy that I was dating, you know, can we have sex? But then it just happened. Do you know what I mean? I don't want the magic to go. It just happened.
But isn't that part of it, those teenage fumbling years?
Yeah, it is. A bit of dry humping. It's fun. Sorry, but it is. But
bring back the dry humping thing.
My son said, he was like, I want to get an actual text message from the girl that I'm going to have sex with. He was like, I need, just in case, because I think a lot of men are like, well, we can't, you know, we could just say to, they're scared.
Yeah.
They could say to a girl, oh, I like your dress, or you look really nice in that. And then it could be like, are you coming on to me?
Yeah.
Like, you know, how dare you? Hashtag me too. I feel like there could be a real fine line between just being nice and complimentary or being a bit pervy.
Yes. And there is a difference.
So because of that, I feel like men would rather just not say anything. Yeah. So then they just become this kind of like nothing.
Yeah.
And it's really hard because I love... Yeah, I'm a feminist. It doesn't mean I hate men. It just means that I want women to do well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I am quite old school. I like it if a man opens a door for me, which never happens.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of it. And like in my grandfather's era, I remember going to his house for tea, and whenever his wife would walk in the room, or if my mum, if a lady walked in the room, he would stand up. How nice is that?
I know, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation.
Stand up and show respect.
Yeah.
And I know that's a generation gone, you know, that's gone, unfortunately, because that is lovely. But, you know, if men did that now, would women be like, what are you standing up for? Like, sit down. How dare you?
Yeah.
I don't need you to stand up for me. I can stand up for myself. You know, it's really difficult. Women are so strong and so powerful, which I'm all for.
Yeah.
Is our power starting to diminish men's power?
I totally get it. And like, even as I'm talking about this, I'm nervous because I'm like, is this going to be perceived as, and it's not, but it's almost the 360 moment where you were talking about early motherhood.
Mm.
And I can relate to this. I just wanted someone to mind me. Like, as women, yes, we can be strong and yes, we can do things, and rightly so. But there's moments in our life where we are vulnerable. And like, I think one of those moments is early motherhood where we need to be taken care of. And I do have that fear. And it's interesting. And again, oh God, we might even have to cut this out. I don't know if I want to put it in. But as I was walking here yesterday, it just shows how much things have changed. And this is for a very positive reason, what I'm going to say. I was walking past here and I was in, like, it was really hot. I'd kind of a shortish dress on. And I was walking past a group of young men and they were all sitting down. There was like seven of them. And I braced myself for, oh, here come the wolf whistles. Yeah, here comes the like. And I literally inhaled going, here we go.
Mm.
Silence.
Mm.
And I walked past and I was like, oh, this feels nice, but something has changed. Because the last time I walked past a group of men in a short skirt, I got the wolf whistles. And it like, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I didn't want them to wolf whistle, but it was like, oh, wow.
It's nice.
It's changed.
It has changed. And the thing is, again, I've been in so many situations, especially in the 90s and
oh yeah, whatever. We all got it.
Like,
yeah.
Like you got a wolf whistle or a beep of a horn from a guy. And back then I quite liked it because I was like, cool, thank you. You've just boosted the confidence that I needed. You know, I'm 16, 17. Oh, thank you. You know, I'm a bit nervous in this outfit, but thanks, you know. Whereas now obviously we can't do that. And there are times where I'm a bit like, hang on a minute.
I put effort into this.
Do you not think I look nice? But it's our generation. Can you imagine, say, our daughter's generation? They'll never experience this.
No, they won't.
So they're not growing up with it. So they won't know the difference.
Yeah.
Whereas because we have had that, and when I have had that, I haven't felt like I'm prey. I just feel like, thanks.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, that's
and
nice.
It's funny because I
and this might be the wrong thing to say. It's just my age.
Yeah.
It's just I'm really thankful that they no longer do that, because I think for younger girls it could be, I wouldn't want a guy to do that to my daughter, for example. Yeah. And also they've I don't know if you the Sun newspaper they used to have in like the Page 3 girl,
oh,
it was like a topless girl every week or every day, I don't even know.
Is that still happening?
No. Yeah. That's gone. I'm very pleased that's gone.
That's gone.
I'm really pleased that's gone.
I mean, would we have had men on Page 3?
No.
Like,
of course not. Of course not.
I wouldn't want to see it. Like, put it away.
No, put it away.
I don't want to see that.
Put it away. Put it away. But it's interesting, isn't it? How things have definitely changed.
And I had such mixed feelings that like I was bracing myself. And this is how my thought process went. I was like, here we go. And then it didn't happen. And my initial thought was, oh, that's because you're like a 40-year-old woman now, Laura. Like you don't have it, right? You don't have it anymore,
right?
Oh,
you've still got it.
And then I thought, no, Laura, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
You want them to wolf whistle Anna when she's walking
exactly.
past. Exactly. And it was the first time because... Actually, in Ireland, I think I would have been wolf whistled.
Yeah.
And it was really just lovely in London to go, this doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. And I'm just processing this as a woman because it's the first time I haven't been wolf whistled. And it's not because I don't have it anymore. It's because they're being really respectful.
There is another layer of respect for women, which is great.
Yeah.
I had to actually kind of had a little word with my father-in-law, who's in his late 70s. We went to a restaurant and... He was really flirty with the waitress.
Okay.
Who must have been in her late 20s. He was just being playful, but it was too flirty.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't do that, anyone. He's like, why not? I'm just being nice. Doesn't she want a tip? And I was like, you can't do that anymore. And there are things that their generation are still trying to catch up with. Mm. And even my mum... who's also late 70s. What happened? Something happened the other day and it was a bit disrespectful to women. And her response was, oh God, we all went through that. It's fine. You need to get on with it. And I'm like, fine in your day, but things have evolved and they've changed now. And actually that's not okay.
Yeah.
And then I'm almost like educating them. I'm like, you can't do that. You can't say that. You need to be more up to date with how everything is.
It's funny you said there, get on with it, because again, like I can relate to that. My mother's generation as well, it was sort of, again, Catholic Ireland.
Yeah.
God forbid anyone knows our business. We're all fine, not fine. Get on with it. Mm. And I think that's a narrative we grew up with. And going into motherhood then, when we found it hard, it was like that narrative of just get on with it, just get on with it. But what does getting on with it even mean? Because to me, it means... you're not recognizing that what you're feeling is hard. You're not validating it. You're not giving yourself permission to do something that might make it easier.
Mm.
You're allowing your inner critic speak, saying you're doing it wrong, you're not enough. And it's back to my point earlier where I said, I don't think there's such thing as a good or a bad mother.
Mm.
There's only a happy mother.
Mm.
And Is that possible? I think for many mothers at the moment, no. I think there's a lot of really deeply unhappy mothers because of everything we spoke about, trying to do it all to live up to this false expectation of the perfect mother or their vision of what they thought motherhood would be. But I think that is the only thing we can try to give ourselves as mothers to navigate it, is to do whatever small things we can to make ourselves happy, or to rewrite the rules or cut corners or like ditch that external narrative. Like, what do you think? Like, what do you think of when you hear just get on with it?
Well, it's just brushing under the carpet, isn't it? You know, it's...
We don't even have a carpet, probably our generation, because they're too bloody expensive.
Exactly. Just brush it under the doormat. I think my mum just had to stay busy to go. So my dad left my sister was, it was actually on my sister's sixth birthday party, like really harsh. Like my mum had the, my sister's birthday party at home, which I'm literally doing tomorrow for my daughter's sixth birthday party. So now that I'm in the same situation, I'm like, I can't even begin to imagine what my mum went through. So hosting a birthday party, bunch of kids there, families there. Mum's like, where's your dad? You know, no mobile phones. You can't just text them. It's like, hurry up. And Kate comes out, he arrives, and Mum's like, well, thank God you're here. We're about to blow out the candles. And then he's like, yeah, actually, I'm off. I can't do this. I'm leaving. And his girlfriend was in the car.
Louise.
Awful, awful. So my mum was left with three kids under the age of six, found out that her husband was leaving her and the girlfriend's in the car at this birthday party, so my mum couldn't make a big fuss about it. And that was it. And as you said, like, you know, no one really wants to know your business. You didn't really tell your business. You know, no one was online. There was no kind of community. It was just, you just got on with it. And that was her survival, was she had no job.
Wow.
So she had to get a job.
Yeah.
Try and train herself up, and she did, and she trained herself up, and she became an accountant, and she's actually just retired, and now she's so happy. Like, she has got a very nice happy ending. But so she didn't have a, she says to me, she had two choices. She could either completely lose it and crumble and really fail, or she could just get the fuck on with it. Yeah. And she chose the second. And that, whatever that means to her, she did that. And whenever I feel like I'm in the depths of struggling, I think of that. I'm like, I've got two choices here, and I'm going to choose to rise above this.
Yeah.
And in whatever capacity I need for my self-care, whether it's just finishing a cup of coffee, going for a walk around the corner, speaking to a friend on the phone, listening to music really loudly in my car, I will do those small things, but I will just get on with it. And my mum just like to say to me, Louise, you don't have it hard. You don't have it hard. Look what I went through. And I'm like, fine. Okay.
But hard is hard. There's no, like, hard is hard. And I think you touched on something really key there. As mothers, we don't have the option of falling apart. No matter what comes at us.
We don't have the option to even have the flu.
We don't have the option to go down for a day.
No.
We keep going. And I think that's what makes us absolutely phenomenal.
We're like, superheroes.
We're superhuman. We're doing it with sleep deprivation.
Oh my God, we're amazing.
Like,
we're absolutely amazing.
We are
amazing.
The better gender.
I'm sorry, but we're the stronger gender. We are the stronger. Can you imagine, sorry, and if there's men listening, we do love men, but can you imagine the men trying to give birth, how much we would hear about it? Again, in the good old days, when my grandmother had children, she was in hospital for a month and you stayed there for a month.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And actually, how brilliant is that? Now, I gave birth at 11:30 at night and I went home at 5 in the morning.
Good God.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mum was the same. She was like, I was in hospital for 2 weeks. They took you away every night.
Yeah.
I didn't actually see you for 2 weeks. And then when I saw you, it was wonderful because I was rested. I'm like, ma'am, I literally had postpartum hemorrhage.
Oh, so did I. Oh,
I couldn't sit up on the bed.
Oh, it was horrendous.
Couldn't open my eyes. Yeah. I couldn't stand. And there I was holding a baby. And all you hear is enjoy every moment. I'm like, I think I'm going to die. Literally, I have lost half of my blood.
Yeah.
But enjoy every moment. Yeah, where's the gush of love? There was a gush of blood.
Yeah.
I had that.
That's really scary.
Yeah.
That's really scary.
But I think kind of to summarize this part before we move on to the audience confession, I think are we kind of saying, well, we're definitely amazing. We know that as mothers. But I think what you're really leaning into is it is about getting on with it in whatever way you need to mind yourself through that process.
For me, I think it's staying positive.
Yeah.
It's so easy to go into negativeville and kind of pick apart everything. But for me, like I really focus and I strive to always try and be positive, like look at the positives in every situation. Yeah. And then when I do that, I really see everything kind of like flip in a good way. I think that's why I do my reels. Like I make fun of situations that can be really stressful as mothers, you know, getting your kids to brush their teeth or getting them to sit down on an aeroplane or eating their food or washing their hair. All the things that I have as a mother gone like, oh my God, like, come on, like, this is ridiculous. And then I've taken that and I've done a sketch online to make it funny so other women, other mothers can look at it and laugh. Mm. And for me, knowing that I've made other people laugh, for me, that's like, okay, well, that's a positive then. So actually, maybe it's not so bad that my kids can be absolutely horrendous because it's giving me material to make good videos good. For other people to laugh. But so yeah, it's trying to put a positive spin. It's trying to look at life in a more positive way.
Yeah. But I think that's why your content is so successful, because you're kind of talking about it there as they're just funny little reels. But actually, Louise, I think there's so much more than that, because what you're doing is helping women feel seen in their experience.
Yeah.
Like, we've all been there. I literally shouted at my kids the other night going, I am just trying to keep you healthy and safe and alive. Mm. I'm just trying to wash you. Mm. Like, just get in the bath.
Yeah.
Like, today is not the day. And we've all had those moments, but we feel alone in it because we think Mary down the road, her children just get into the bath.
Yeah.
And they just brush their teeth and they get dressed when they're asked. Mm. And what your content does, Louise, I think it's our whole generation of mothers are like, I feel seen. I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. I'm not doing it wrong. Mm. And like, that's what you're doing is so much more than like funny little reels. No, they are literally, they're rewriting the rules of motherhood.
Oh, that's
I think.
Good. Thank you. And thank you. Because when I first became a mother, my group, I don't know if you have it in Ireland, it's called NCT. You basically meet up with a group of women who are all having babies at the same time, but you don't know them.
No, we've not.
You get put into this group.
We've no support in Ireland.
Oh, God. No wonder you're all like, oh. But
sorry,
then saying that.
Sorry, I'll get in trouble for that. There are certain toddler and baby groups and stuff, but as a whole, we do not support mothers in Ireland in any capacity. Come at me if you want. We don't.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's why you have a podcast.
That's why I've made a career out of this. Yeah.
So we have something called NCT, and it's you get put together with people you don't know when you're pregnant that live in your area, and you'll become friends, and then you have this journey together. So when your babies arrive, you can all meet up. And so you have your community.
Yeah. Your village.
Your village. But my village and my community failed me miserably because they all lied about how amazing everything was.
Oh God, no, my worst.
Yeah.
Group.
And I do think this is one of the reasons why I wanted to be real online, because the way that I felt feeling like, again, I'm doing everything wrong, I'm failing. And what was interesting was we went out for coffee. I'll never forget this. And our babies were about 3 weeks old, like proper in the trenches. Probably around the same time I put poo on my husband's, under my husband's nose. But, I remember sitting down and everyone was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, my baby's sleeping through the night and my husband is
lying. There's no baby that is sleeping through the night
right.
3 weeks.
So then
right?
I could have said, yeah, me too. Isn't it amazing? I could have said that and then gone home and cried, but I didn't. I said, how are you doing that? I'm struggling. My baby doesn't sleep. I want to punch my husband in the face.
I didn't tell them about the poo.
And then that's when they were like, oh God, yeah, me too. And I'm like, guys, can we please be honest? This is all we have. We only have each other. There is no medal for anyone who can get their baby to sleep faster, or there's no one that gets a certificate for not arguing with their partner. Like, this is hard. This is hard. And we're in this together. And I just thought, you have to be honest with each other, because you want that community. You want that village. And if you're not going to be honest, then what's the point?
Yeah.
So that's why I was just like, no. And then I wrote a book actually, and it's basically my reels in a book. It's funny and very relatable. It's been out for, I think it's been out for 2 years now. So this isn't like a plug to buy my book. You know, it's out there if you
want
to.
We will link it below in the description.
Thank you. But it is called Mamas Still Got It. And it's basically all the shit that we go through as mothers throughout the academic school year. So the book starts in September when kids go back to school and then all through to August and all the things that we go through as mothers, as parents. And it is very, it's funny. It's funny.
Over 80% of you told me that scrolling on social media makes you feel like you're failing as a mother. We are the first generation of mothers who have access to social media. At our fingertips, we are being shown images of perfect motherhood and how a mother should feel every minute of the day. The thing is, social media can't meet you where you are at. It doesn't do justice to the grey areas of motherhood. That's why I created The Village. It's a space off the scroll, away from the noise, and it's built to meet you exactly where you are. I'm offering all Mumfessions listeners 30 days of free access to The Village. Click the link in the description below for immediate free access. I can't wait to support you there. Would you like to help me answer an audience Mumfession?
Yes.
Let's go for it.
Yes.
My Mumfession is that I recently took some money out of my children's savings account to buy myself some new clothes, some makeup, and some actual underwear that isn't 6 years old and falling apart. I feel zero guilt. It's honestly one of the best things I've ever done. It came after a moment one evening. I was folding their laundry, looking at all these gorgeous clothes they have. And then I looked at my own wardrobe, which consisted of underwear with holes, leggings that are basically disintegrating, and mascara that's probably expired and ready to give me conjunctivitis. I realised I had nothing that made me feel like me anymore. So I bought myself some new bits. And it felt so good. Like I was finally coming back to myself a little bit. Ladies, for the love of God, ditch your holy knickers. Go shopping and invest in something that makes you feel human again.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't even think this should be a Mumfession. This should be celebrated.
That is absolutely fine. You think how much money we spend on our kids? Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Can we stop going around with holes in our knickers, please? Yeah.
Like, buy a new bra. Everyone's wearing the wrong size bra.
Yeah.
Go and buy a new bra, but it's some nice knickers. Go for dinner. Go to Ibiza.
Sell the house. Buy a new house.
Yeah, get your nails done. Get your hair done. Do it all. Kids don't need. They don't need savings.
Raise
right
their
now.
Savings. They don't need education.
They don't need it right we now. Just.
But like, it. Do you know what this is? This is the false narrative of a good mother doesn't take care of herself. A good mother always puts her kids first. We are literally a generation of mothers going around with holes in our underwear that are probably still wearing our maternity bras from 5 years ago.
I think the bra I'm wearing today is really, really old. In fact, it's actually not even the right size anymore.
Yeah, like we need to go in, get our bra size measured, invest in some underwear, throw out the ones with holes. Like literally, it's quite sad.
Yes, yes, like, yes. So yes, and actually... wearing, there is actually some scientific evidence behind this. If you wear matching nice underwear, it actually kind of creates a bit of a buzz for you. Yeah. Not even sexually, just like, oh, I've got a really great set on to my clothes and it's just for me. Like I'm doing it for me. No one's going to see it.
Nobody's going to see it. But
maybe your partner. But
it is.
If he's lucky.
If he's lucky. If he's lucky and we're not tired.
Yeah. Yeah.
But... It is really sad. Like, I think the fact that she feels like that has to be kept secret.
No, it's absolutely fine.
Like, your kids literally don't care what they're wearing.
Oh, it's fine, honestly. I think that, as I said, spend away. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, do it all. So that is our task for everyone today.
Yes.
Go check your underwear.
Check your underwear and raid your kids' piggy bank.
So I don't know about your kids, but like... mine just want to wear their pajamas all the time. Like I have daily morning battles. I have their clothes and I don't spend a lot of money on their clothes because one, they grow and two,
they're
children.
Yeah, they grow so fast, don't they?
That's a daily battle of I want to wear my pajamas to school. And some mornings for Anna, who's still in nursery, I'm like, just go for it. Like I actually don't care. This is not a battle I'm fighting.
Yeah. No, nursery, if my daughter especially wanted to just wear whatever, I'd be like, it's fine, go. But yeah, be creative, like whatever you want to be. But I must say my daughter now, she is very particular what she wears. she has to choose what she's going to wear. Like, she packs her own suitcase when we go on holiday. Wow. But I've bought her some really beautiful dresses and she will not wear them.
Oh, yeah.
She refuses, but she will wear clothes and she looks like she's, you know, an extra from Oliver. And I'm like, well, don't you want to wear like the nice dress that's brand new? And she's like, no, I want to wear these leggings that are really old, have holes in, and they've been through the wash a million times, but they still look like she's been rolling around in mud, and she wants to wear those. And I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. So I just, you know, again, it's like, fine, you can do what you want.
Yeah, I think that's our message here. Stop buying your children fancy clothes.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't care. Ourselves some, for like, at the bare minimum, ladies, yeah, we need to be having underwear. Yes. That doesn't have holes in them.
Yeah, no.
I mean, no. Literally, after everything we've been through down there, we need nice underwear, yeah, nice bra, and just, you know, leggings that aren't falling apart. Like, we've, yes, done it. You know when you put them on and you're like, I know these have been washed 100 times.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing left in them. Like, buy some nice bits for ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Raid the children's savings.
Do it. I remember wearing a bra. I had stopped breastfeeding, but I was, and I caught myself, I was still wearing my maternity bra that was stained all around the nipple area and was also hard.
Yeah.
Because of the milk. And I was just like, what am I doing? This is not good. So I did go out and buy myself a new bra and feel fabulous for it.
But isn't this interesting? What we were speaking about earlier, we easily handed over thousands for the best buggy, the best everything. And then we are literally going around with like bras that...
Yeah. It's because we put ourselves down the pecking order of importance. And actually, we need to stop doing that. Yeah. If you think about when the oxygen masks come down in an aeroplane, you're meant to put your own one on first and then you do everyone else's. And there is some sense behind that. Like, we need to remember ourselves. Remember you. You know, we're important.
I always say, and again, I get in trouble, I am the most important person in my family.
Oh my God, of course we are. Do you not find, if my energy is off in the house, the whole household is off.
Yeah. I am the glue
that
holds them together. If I'm okay, they're okay. And that is coming from a mother who has 3 neurodivergent children. Mm. I have worked with every expert you can think of. Mm. If I'm okay, they're okay. And that is why I left my children 2 days ago, flew to London. My 9-year-old was crying out the window and I was like, bye-bye. Did I feel guilt? No. Literally, because I was like, why? Going to London, I do a job I love. I literally do not feel guilt anymore.
God, about that's
and, great. And that's coming from someone who, like, I literally was so unwell for the first year of motherhood, first 3 years, thought I was the worst mother in the world. And like, Louise, guilt has no purpose. No. It just depletes our reserves even more. Like, we're not doing anything wrong. Yeah. For me, if you feel that guilt, it's about, is this because it's a should, so that external pressure, or is it something I need or want? If it's something you need or want, then it's a challenge. So how do I make it happen or not happen? Like,
true. I have got better with the mum guilt, but it just try and seep in. I'm like, get out.
We've no time for this.
But then I do. So my 2 sons are older, you know, 13 and 9. And if I'm not there for school pickup, they're like, that's fine. Because, you know, my husband's there and he's like, that's fine, whatever. But it's my daughter. She's still like, what do you mean you're not there at school pickup? Mommy, I want you there at school pickup. And then, you know, there will be a bit of a drama. And I'm like, oh, but I'm working and dad will pick you up and I'll be there for supper time and bath time and bedtime. I'll do all of that. And I think she's the one that's a bit, and the thing is, she's absolutely fine when, you know, when she gets picked up from school if my husband's doing it. Absolutely fine. And then, but I'll still like text, you know, Jesse, and I'm like, is everything okay? And he's like, babe, it's fine. Everything is fine. Yeah. Go and do what you need to do. Don't worry about it. So thank goodness he is, you know, he's like, just go and do what you need to do. It's fine.
And that's what makes the difference. And the final thing I'll say is that what irks me is, because I'm in London a lot and it's always, who's minding your kids?
Oh my God. My mum does this all the time. To be fair, now you know the story of my mum and being a single mother, she didn't have help at all. And so when I say I'm in London or I'm abroad or whatever, she's like, who's got the children?
I just left them.
And I'm like, Mum, who do you think has the children? Really?
Their father.
Who do you think? And then she's like, oh, yes, of course. Oh, he's such a good father. And I'm like, yes, he is. But this is actually quite normal. And
this I know is that his he job.
Didn't, he didn't, my mum didn't go through that. So she looks at my husband and my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, and she's like, you don't know how lucky you are to have these men. I'm like, they still drive us crazy, Mum. Yes, they're still here, but they drive us crazy. But yes, she never had that. So she finds it all like quite, like when we said we were having a baby, I think she was, in her head, she was like, oh God, well, you're going to be a single mother then, and it's really hard. And to all the single mothers out there, my God, you're amazing.
You are another level.
Another level of superhero.
Yeah, like we need capes. But yeah, it is. It's that, like when I go to London, my parents are like, yeah, we'll make sure, is Brendan okay? Does he need food? I'm like, when am I offered the food? Like, like what? He's so fine. He's a grown man.
So true.
He's got this.
Yeah.
You know, it's so true. It's so interesting that as mothers, we just want someone to mind us.
Mm.
But yet, if a man is doing it, there's the narrative of, oh, well, we need to mind him. No, mind us.
Yeah,
mind us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Louise, it was such a pleasure.
It's been brilliant.
We went up and down around.
We did everything,
covered,
didn't we?
Yeah. Covered a lot of topics, but it was such a pleasure to have you on Confessions. And
all mine. Thank you for having me.
I genuinely do mean it when I say what you're doing is supporting mothers. They're funny little reels. They are.
Thank you.
They're quite literally supporting mothers in a way you'll never understand. And that's exactly why you're here.
Oh, thank you. That's amazing. Thank you very much. That's a very nice compliment.
I can't believe that I just recorded an episode with the amazing Louise Boyce. And you know what I am taking from this whole conversation is everything I have been talking about for the last number of years. And that is how essential it is to mind mommy. Like, this is not a luxury. This is not a nice to have. The only way we can navigate this is to mind ourselves. And I am not talking about the bubble baths and the deep breathing and the walks and the spa days. You know, if you've been following me for a while, that is not what I mean by minding mommy. I mean letting go of all of those external pressures and shoulds, letting go of the rules of motherhood, letting go of whatever experience you thought you would have, and sitting in the experience you are having and giving yourself permission to do whatever you need and want to do to make this chapter of motherhood easier. And ladies, go and buy yourself some new underwear. I mean, for the love of God, we cannot be going around in tatters. It is okay. I want all of us this week to go and get our bra size measured, invest in one good bra and some new underwear. And just remember, we are literally the most important people in our family. When we're okay, they're okay. And I'm not saying that to add more pressure to you, but just to recognize that you are literally doing your best and there is no right or wrong way to navigate motherhood. And because we are the first generation of mothers who are trying to rewrite the rules and navigate the expectation of doing it all, it's even more important to mind ourselves because there are no rules. We are creating them. And that means that you don't have to do what you have been told you should do. You get to choose what is right from you. And I really, really hope that you took as much from this conversation with Louise as I did. And remember that sometimes the best thing we can do for ourselves is sharing how we really feel, being honest about it, and maybe leaning into something that gives us that little bit of a laugh to realize, however hard this chapter is in motherhood, this too shall pass. Thank you for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the subscribe or follow button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and a rating wherever you're listening. I'd really, really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching, or join the village via the link in the description below. I hope you have a wonderful week, and remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy, it's essential. Mumfessions is an Insanity Studios production. The head of production is Charlotte Mason. The head of digital is Ed Buckley. And the production assistant is Abby Sandler.